We put so much emphasis on our thoughts and our emotions. So much so that we identify ourselves with these emotions and our thoughts.
Our ever-changing world calls upon the most courageous, resilient, and relentless of us to face its most extraordinary challenges. To help you embark on this journey, we present the Impactful Coaching Podcast, your oasis for inspiration and a beacon to spark the fires of greatness within you. I'm Joseph. I will be your ally in this journey to empower your potential. Join us each week as we dive deep into the heart of ambition, drive, and success to unravel compelling stories of daring leaders who dreamed, struggled, and achieved victory. Our journey begins now. How's everybody doing? This is the Impactful Coaching Podcast. My name is Joseph. And as always, it is an honor and a privilege to be able to learn what I can learn, share what I can share, and get the messages out there. I am here today with Carlene Sullivan. Carlene, before we introduce you to the audience, I think first thing is, how are you doing today? How are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty well. I have no complaints, and I'm very delighted to be here. Thank you for inviting me. And I feel as good as I could possibly feel.
That's great. Well, thank you for being on the program. We're delving into some subject matter today that I am a huge fan of, and I just want to do a little bit of, because like the nature of the coaching podcast is that we cover a lot of different subjects, a lot of different areas. So if we're having a conversation about sex, I usually want to say that off the top. If we're having a conversation about anxiety, I want to say off the top. Today, we're having a conversation that I think it's going to go into a lot of areas, but I would summarize it as about our intuition as human beings. And there's also, I think, going to be an element of evolution to this as well, because one of the themes that I've personally made a mission to discuss on the program since I was inspired to do it several episodes ago is that AI is getting pretty good at what it does, and it's only getting better faster. And there has to be some human counterbalance for us to innovate. Otherwise, we're just going to kind of get stuck in the machines and become the cogs towards the machines. And nobody wants that. Okay, well, some people want that, but for the most part, most of us don't want that. The reason why we're having this conversation today is because this is a lot of the areas that you're an expert in. And as a start, would you care to tell the audience, what do you bring to the coaching world and what do you do on a daily basis?
So what I do on a daily basis, this is actually quite interesting because it's very difficult to put into words exactly what I do. English is a very limited language, therefore all languages are limiting in their words. However, since we live in a world based on titles and things like this and names, I approach it as that I'm an intuitive spiritual coach and a mindset coach. And what I do is basically I help people harness their power, their innate power, from their intuitive abilities. So we live in a world currently where we are driven. So there's a lot of emphasis on our drive and our success and our passion and following our hearts. What we find sometimes is in that we lose our ability to listen to our own innate voice, especially with all the external noise coming. So we live in a how-to world. You know, if you look at any, you know, best-selling books, generally speaking, it's how to combat this or how to be this. And so when you speak about intuition, this is a very, I would say it's not as easily graspable as the how-tos, because people are searching for, how do I become intuitive? You know, how do I do it? And if they cannot actually understand it from a logical or rational perspective, they either A, put it to the side as unimportant, or B, consider it some esoteric, super witchy power, which what I do is I work with individuals to, from an evolutionary and biological basis, and explain to them not only how to become intuitive and recognize it, but also that it's a part of our evolutionary process. And potentially Also, how we can coexist with artificial intelligence.
You know, when you were discussing how some of the most popular books are always in the how-to section, it made me think of the derivative is series of that, the Four Dummies series, and how there are so many different subjects that can all be taught through this framing, whether that's illustration for dummies, C++ for dummies, exercise for dummies. It's just this whole series that covers all of these different subjects. And I'm not sure what's your take on that particular series, but I personally have an appreciation for them because A, there's a sense of humor to it. There's a little bit less of a divide between the people who can do it and the people who can't. It's sort of accepting that as humans, no matter how much we know, there's our vast, vast seas of things that we don't know. And having a little bit of humility to pick up a book like that and say, you know, I'm still the person, I'm still going to be a dummy at the end of the book. I'm just going to be a dummy who now knows how to do this. Rather than, I think with a lot of these how-to books, is to see these and feel like in addition to the instructions, it's supposed to be this blueprint for how I'm supposed to evolve as a human being towards the end of it. And that seems like a lofty promise. So this is a warm-up question. It isn't really part of the agenda, but I'm just curious of like, in literature, have you seen any particular examples that have served the kind of purpose that you're serving?
Not necessarily. Most of my experience is actually based on one-to-one experience or group experience with individuals. I've been working in the natural health industry for over 2 decades, and I have a very intimate position with people on a one-on-one basis, not only from a digital perspective of what we're doing today, but mostly on personal perspectives. So most of the time, I'm one-on-one with individuals. And I'm a writer myself, so I spend a lot of my time within my own voice. And it's one of the challenges that I find for myself is when I explain to people, we will, or there is a high possibility, since we are products of Mother Earth, or moreover, we're actually products of the universe. That there's a high possibility that as we evolve into a more conscious and a higher elevated human being on an awareness level, that we will begin to utilize our intuitive abilities. However, it's very interesting because when I talk about these things, you know, if I'm, let's say, in a live lecture, and I always welcome questions, you know, someone will raise their hand and they'll be like, but how do I become intuitive? This is something that I think that we are socialized to do. And it's, of course, I mean, you know, I love doing, let's say, sports, outdoor sports. You know, so I will definitely read a book, for example, on how to, you know, have my technique a little bit more refined so I become a better or professional sports person. You know, so of course there's that aspect. However, it's a little bit for, you know, having people listen to their voice as their truth, it doesn't necessarily fall into the how-tos. You know, and I'm not exactly sure if I answered your question about that, but you know, we are from an evolutionary perspective, you know, we're the Homo sapiens, which is a Latin word for the man of knowing. Okay. And we have so much information. It's almost as if we're overloaded with information. The external noise has basically, you know, it's like wearing four jackets instead of one. You know, so we've become heavy and heavier and heavier with information. And through that all, when you take off all those jackets and you're just wearing the one knowledgeable jacket instead of all of them, at that point there, you're more apt to hear your innate voice. And that is something that is extremely relevant in today's world. You know, there's so many times I'm, as I work as a natural health specialist, And there is an increase, especially in younger adults that are experiencing anxiety, depression, insomnia, all of these aspects. And they don't necessarily have not only a cause, they don't have a necessarily a cause, but also they don't have a solution. And this is more and more what I'm seeing and what drives me to help people find their innate voice. And what's interesting is, even when you come down to the simplest tasks, for instance, with health and betterment and optimizing your well-being, what's interesting is not only are we the Homo sapiens, which is the man of the knowing, but when I, let's for instance, I'm working with someone and I say something as simple as, it appears that you may be a little bit dehydrated. You need to drink more water. And generally speaking, I would say 99% of the time when I'm speaking to an individual about their health, they respond to me, I know. Or when I say, it seems to be you need to be getting out in nature a bit more or become more physical active. So you become more balanced, not only with your emotional and spiritual being, but also your physical being. Generally speaking, the person will reply, I know. So what I do is I find that actually this is very interesting for me. And the reason is because how do we elevate from becoming a being of I know to actually taking all that knowledge of the how-tos and all the information that we're receiving and actually bring that into action? And so what I teach people is when you start to increase your intuition, and that's already happening. When I have people that are, let's say, inflicted with anxiety or depression or any of these things or insomnia, I congratulate them because it's basically their body trying to sort of squirm out of everything that they know and begin to listen to their voice, their essential, unique placement on this planet. And so when that happens, when there's this rise, especially in young adults, it's their lack of understanding that this is should be considered somewhat of a celebration, even though there's discomfort in it. Because essentially what it's saying is there's something more coming. When you can strip yourself of all the knowledge and the how-tos. And of course, I want to integrate and be a human being in the world where I know how to drive a car and things like this. But there's also an innate knowing within myself that moves mountains past everything that I can learn from the society that I'm actually in at the moment.
So I love to reinforce this subject because I don't know exactly which generation would be the first generation to really start to experience this, and I guess the first signs of it, as it was reflected in the media, would be Generation X might have been the first generation to sense that dissatisfaction with the way the industrial world had laid out the groundwork for how people were supposed to live our lives, which is a very institutional lived experience, going from school to school to school to workplace, stick to there until you put in a grave. And the first signs of that were, I think, exhibited in Generation X, and then I think it hit an apex with the millennial and Gen Z generation. That's just me just trying to like work out the timeline of this. What I'm getting at with this is that the disconnect between these issues that we're facing comes at it from multiple angles. The first angle is the idea that any skills that are, that we're developing seem to pale in comparison to the more integral human skills that our generation lacks. So I, for one, I don't drive a car. If you know the power goes out and chaos ensues, I don't know how long I'm going to survive. But I know how to use the script, right? I know how to use the Adobe Creative Suite, and the disparity between the talents that I do have versus how those talents would integrate in a more, you know, primal human setting, that causes anxiety. The inundation of information and trying to work out what is objectively true is another one of these angles. But what I've picked up from you and what I picked up from reading some of your work online is that these anxieties and these issues that our generations are facing can be perceived as gifts, and they are signs that we are evolving towards a species that needs to use these traits in order to continue guiding humanity forward. So is this something that you've experienced with clients, the sort of the disconnect between what we are bringing to the table versus perhaps what we were expected to based off prior generations of expectations?
You know, it's interesting because what I find mostly is that we put so much emphasis on our thoughts and our emotions, so much so that we identify ourselves with these emotions and our thoughts. And we are not thoughts. We have, let's say, 8 billion people, give or take, on the planet today. Thoughts cannot be duplicated. They can't be copy, paste. And so each one of us has different thoughts. They can never be replicated. If I look, let's say, at this pen, and you look at this same pen, we will have a different perception of the same exact viewing of the pen. So our thoughts are completely different on the same exact tangible subject of this pen, mm-hmm. Okay? Which technically means that we are not living in a world of one story. We're living in a world of 8 billion different stories. And when we understand it to that capacity, we also should recognize that our emotions also cannot be duplicated. So let's just say someone has anxiety or is a little anxious about the future yesterday, okay? Then they wake up and they're anxious about the future in the same subject. Even though it's the same topic or the same theme, the emotion itself has slightly altered. So it never ever can be duplicated or replicated. And we put so much emphasis on our feelings and our thoughts that we're actually getting lost in our personhood. And we're not harnessing our innate power. You know, of course I think. You know, I mean, I have to think. I had to think to turn on this Zoom. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to think to, you know, plan an appointment or talk with people. And of course, when my dog does something funny, it makes me laugh. It brings emotion. But it's very important that I also know that this is essentially not who I am, because what I am essentially is energy. Okay. People can call it from a spiritual perspective, but we all come from the universe. We are products of the universe and products of Mother Earth. And energy, no matter what religion or what method or what technique that you follow, according to the law of conservation, it can neither be created nor destroyed. It can only be transferred, transformed, or divided. So when I focus on that energy and not keep it caged inside my body, like we're always like, oh, focus on your soul. Why do we feel as though we need to have our body as the vehicle to our soul? Why couldn't we actually allow our soul to envelop our body? So we become a more elevated and more conscious human being, where we're creating an energetic force with not only ourselves, because when you do this, and this is why I work one-on-one with people, because it's easier for them when they see something. If they see something, they can see the energy radiating from a human being that's on this awareness level. And it comes from actually allowing yourself to harness this innate power. It's quite interesting, you know, because we follow these laws of manifestation, for instance. This is the new thing. I'm going to manifest my future. Okay. Or I'm making vision boards. Or let me see, I am a higher consciousness human being on planet Earth. You know, all of these things, what we're doing, and even tarot cards, astrology, lucky numbers. I mean, it's everywhere. Okay. So what we're doing is we're using these, and I know I'm treading on, you know, thin ice when I say this, we're using these superstitions as our powers. Okay. And authentically speaking, we are the power over these methods and techniques. And of course, we can use them to better ourselves, but they are not our faucets of existence. They are not what we essentially are. And it's like, for instance, I have a question for you.
Sure.
And this requires a little bit of an imagination, just a little bit, not a lot.
Okay, I'll try not to overdo it.
Okay, no, it's it's really easy. So I want you to just imagine a dog goes into the lake. You're at a beach, a dog goes into the lake. Mm-hmm. What is the first thing the dog does when he comes or she comes out of the water within 2 minutes? Can you tell me that?
Yeah, the dog will more than likely shake off the excess water.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And why does the dog do that?
Instinct?
This is just imagination. There's no right or wrong answer, to be honest.
I guess the dog just recognizes the discomfort of being excessively wet and just instinctively knows how to get rid of it.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so the dog actually loves water. It loves to swim in water. It enjoys it, but it also doesn't like to be drenched. And so what it does is it shakes off the water, so it still remains wet. However, there's just a light film of water that weaves its way through its fur, because instinctively it wants to be itself. And so when we as human beings, when we take all these methods and techniques, and these are actually fabulous, we live on like an adult version of Disney World. I mean, it's completely incredible what humankind has created. It is beyond astounding. It is incredible what we are capable of doing. However, when we have this access of all these methods and techniques, what we do is we drench ourselves with it. Mm-hmm. And if you just shake it off and allow it to just mingle or weave through the tapestry of your existence, you can use these as, you know, complements to your life, but also have your innate voice as the superior individualized being. And when you can do this, you become your optimized self. And that's why I work with people to help them understand that from an evolutionary perspective, you know, so if you go back in history and you look at, let's say, the Neanderthaler, and excuse me, I speak different languages, so I'm not sure if I have the correct English version or Neanderthaler.
Well, my English teacher in the 10th grade, she called us Neanderthals. So that's been my working assumption.
Okay, so if you go back in history when the Neanderthals, I can't even say it in
Well, I mean,
English.
I like yours better, but I'm.
When the Neanderthaler, when they roamed the planet, there were millions of them. You know, it wasn't just a few hanging out, you know, like when you see a hummingbird. You know, I mean, there were like millions. And what happened was is the world or the earth began to change. And I'm making this very simple so people can get an idea of where I'm going with this without getting into the exact history of the Neanderthalers. But the world began to change, and there were a small group of Neanderthalers. And we are sociable beings. This is why the internet has become such a smash hit. You know, we want to connect with people. That is in our nature. But when the earth began to change, there was a very small group of people, or Neanderthalers at the time, they weren't people, that said to the others in their hoo-hoo language or however they spoke at that time, "We don't know what's going on. But if we don't change the way we think, we won't survive." And so, since we are beings of groups, we like to follow. Most of them, of the Neanderthalers, looked at the small group and said, "Something's not right with you." And they became shunned from the pack. And again, I'm making this very simple. I'm just creating a story from a very elaborate history. And that small group of people journeyed on and became the 8 billion we are today. So the lack of ability for the Neanderthalers to foster a new way of thinking or processing in a cognitive way led to the beginning of their breakdown, whichever came in ailments or diseases. And that's what we're seeing now. And this is actually what is my daily, I'm like a faucet that doesn't run dry, because what I see is happening very clear. This is clarity for me. And so now, you know, that 8 billion, that small group of people that became 8 billion Homo sapiens or Homo sapiens, whatever language that the pronunciation, this has been 250,000 years that we have actually fostered this so-called label or title. And from an evolutionary perspective, it would be of ignorance to not understand that the universe or the earth, and we are products of that there is not something greater for us. And so now we're at this age of transitioning. And more people are being confronted with everything that they learned, all their beliefs, all their how-tos, everything that they are constructed of. Make money, save money, go to bed, get 8 hours of sleep, drink your water, don't do this, do that, you know? And now we're confronted with the earth is changing. And while everyone's walking around pointing fingers at whose fault it is, in actuality, it's the understanding that if we bring ourselves into a higher level of elevating our intuition, which actually is part of our senses that we were born with, you know, some philosophers or theoretical mentors would call it the sixth sense, you know, because we have the five senses. But the sixth sense, we kind of push aside because we'll say, you know, how many, oh, she's a witch. That's what they say. But if someone, let's say hypothetically, calls me a witch, what they're saying is that they don't understand how I do it. And since they don't understand it, it's not important. You know, however, if you look from an evolutionary perspective, and you let's go down. And since we are on a technical level of existence where we're feeding into AI, even at this very moment that we're speaking, let's say the so-called mind of artificial intelligence is actually growing faster and faster and faster, and their intelligence is becoming this just huge, if you want to call it a mind, that we, as a human being, we do not have the capability to process as much information. This is completely impossible. So we should even not even consider that we have that capability. What happens with the AI existence is the AI, let's just say, is the rational mind. It's the logical mind. It's filled with data. And the more and more, and I'm not an artificial intelligence expert. What I do is I'm a professional at natural intelligence. So I try to help people understand the coexistence, how we can coexist in harmony with the AI. And so when the human being starts to sit back and take a break from their rational and analytical mind and begin to trust AI in what it's doing, instead of focusing on analyzing everything from sending emails and looking at it 1,000 times to overthinking small, just small little tasks of our day to the point where it's making us ill. And we bring that trust into the AI and focus more on our intuition as part of our evolutionary process. If there's any skeptics out there about intuition, maybe the question they should, you know, ponder over is, if you see the pioneers or the voyagers of the future, do you see these pioneers or the frontiers of the future, do they have insomnia? Do they have anxiety? Do they have all the information they need, but for some reason they just can't stop overeating? Or do they harness an intelligence that intuitively shakes off everything so they can live within their unique self, and they become not only a human of knowing, but a human of intellect, wisdom, and intuition? And when that happens, AI can never exceed our intelligence, because AI, maybe it has a conscious, that's what they say, some of the higher techie gurus. However, AI, the one thing that they will never be able to harness is intuition. And when human being uses their intuition, we will also be able to, let's say, when I look at someone, I mean, actually, since we've been on the conversation already, I intuitively know what's going on with you on a physical level that you may need to address, okay? I'm not going to get into that right now because it's private information, but I'm using my intuition by doing this. And so what I do—
You tell me after the call?
I will tell you after the call, for sure.
Okay.
When we become intuitive beings, what also correlates or weaves its way into that as well is we also become more empathetic. Because when we see another individual and we can actually see potentially or even feel their pain, it's important to understand and harvest an idea that it's not my pain, for instance. And so we become more empathetic in reaching out and helping that individual. And that, in essence, is what one of the theories I have with what's going on with our, let's say, the Generation X, Generation Z, and the next, I think it's Alpha. I'm not exactly sure.
Yes, and Alpha,
Yeah. And so when that is what's happening, is that we're unaware that according to evolution, like, let's just say I plant a seed outside of an oak tree seed, okay? And I plant it outside in the soil. And I come back 150 years later, that seed is going to eventually grow into a tree. It's not going to grow into a zebra. Okay?
Yeah.
And so, you know, no matter what we do to ourselves, you know, we can create a construction zone as much as we want. But if evolution and the product of this, being the products of this universe and the earth, if by chance that there is a higher plan for us, there is no escape. If we are on this evolutionary process where we're becoming more intuitive and we're not exactly aware of it, it can be easily transmitted from one person to the other. Let's just hypothetically say I'm in the medical clinic and I'm working. Mm-hmm. And there's one person and they have anxiety. And then all of a sudden my heart starts pounding. And I bring in my how-tos because I am human being and I have to, all of a sudden the chime of my yoga teacher comes in and says, okay, Carlene, do the Dirga breath. Breathe in through the stomach, breathe through the rib cage, high up to the collarbones and back down. And so I start the how to breathe, how to rid myself of the anxiety. But essentially speaking, is it possible that we are becoming so intuitive? And since negative energy is 10 times more powerful than positive energy, are we transmitting these emotions from one person to the next?
So I'd like to expand on this theory. So one of the things that my long-term listeners know is that I'm pursuing my passion as a writer. And there is a project that is something that I wanted to use specifically with the aid of AI illustration. I wanted to have that sort of AI motif to it. And it ties into this subject, is the idea of a character who has tried every kind of therapy on the planet and she just can't control the intrusive thoughts, so much so that she's on stage about to receive a reward. And instead of accepting it gracefully in front of all of her, you know, peers and friends and family, she grabs a microphone stand and just starts like freaking out on stage. And she gets signed up for this form of therapy that connects herself to all of the other versions of her that are actively living in other versions of the world. And it teaches her that every time she receives an intrusive thought, that's a bad memory or even a good memory from her past, that actually is another version of herself begging for help. And she has to use her logic to think, how do I help her? How do I give her the instructions to help her move into a higher existence, or just to help her solve the problem in front of her? The problems that are associated with mental illness is our capacity to give in and to sort of embrace that anger or embrace that anxiety or embrace that fear and say, oh, here's the solution to the problem. Get the chair and beat the other person over the head. And her trying to get over that satisfaction of giving in to the darkness and the shadow of it is more pronounced because every time she does, she has broken another version of herself in another part of the world or another part of the universe. And likewise, she'll be caught in these situations and then just get this flash of insight and go, oh my God, I'm looking after myself too. So everyone has to collectively, and this is just her own, connected to her own consciousness. What you're talking about is not only are we connected to ourselves, but we are connected to all of the other people around us too. And then the other thing that I wanted to add into this too, that I felt was really interesting that I didn't think about until I've had the chance to hear you speak on this, is that the fear that we have towards automation is the idea that the machines are going to take our jobs and we're not going to have anything left to do. Well, no, because what's actually been happening is that we have been the machines all this time. We were the machines when we had to build the pyramids. We were the machines when we had to line up in armies of tens of thousands of people and shoot each other with muskets. We were the machines due to the Industrial Revolution. We might as well have stuck gears around our necks for how different we were from the workings inside of these enormous factories. We have not been more automizing. We have been actually removed these automations. And yeah, and we're losing some professions on the way. It's affecting service. There's probably, like, within the span of the next 3 years, there's probably going to be an AI version of me that can do exactly what I do to a T, just because of all the times I've been put on the internet and just collect all that information. But what you're saying is it's not going to have my intuition. And that is our guide, and that is our power that we have to hold on to.
It's the leverage of who we are. Yeah. So once we understand that we are intuitive beings, I mean, that's how, you know, let's go back once again, millions of years ago, you know, before we had, you know, we put so much reliance on, let's say, our weather apps, you know, well, oh, it's supposed to rain tomorrow, so I'm not going to go out. You know, and so, and then come to find out it's a beautiful day, mm-hmm. you know, but besides that, there was a time that we did not have the artificial intelligence or the technology to assist us in navigating almost everything that we do in our life. And so we put that intuition on the back burner. And when that happens and we lose that ability to cross mountains, like we've done for hundreds of thousands of years, on top of it barefoot, you know, when we lose this innate instinct and intuition to sort of look at the sky and feel our existence and understand not only what might be coming in the future, but what might be coming in the foresight within moments. When we lose this, there's a chain in our existence that there's a missing link, it's broken. And with the AI, potentially with our availability to ease, we have everything easy technically. Anyone that's listening to this podcast or broadcast at the moment, you know, regardless of the emotional or ailments or struggles that they may be inflicted with at the moment, there is a high possibility that if they look at the reality around them, it's not so bad. You know, so we're not really connected with our intuition because we put all the emphasis on our navigating our way through technology. And my intuition, this has been my skill since I've been a child. And I actually had a high school friend call me yesterday. I haven't spoken to her in I don't know how long. And she called me and she was reminding me of all the weird, crazy things that I predicted. You know, and at that time, I wanted to be normal. I just want to fit in. Why can't I study my math like the rest of the people in the room? You know, and as I grew older and I worked more and more in the spiritual realms of all different aspects of natural healing and holistic approach of well-being, I started to understand that my intuition was actually my skill. And it was something that I should have put in the front, which I do now. And so what I do is I help people along the way so they don't follow that cookie cutter lifestyle. You know, it's not when let's just hypothetically say you go into you take a course. Okay. And you get into the room and you're all sitting there, whether it's a circle or you've got desks or however the setup is. The first thing they do, you know, the teacher in the front of the room will give you the pile of papers. Here it is. Take it one, pass it down. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so you instantly become a method. So your whole mindset is geared towards the method that you're learning. And that's okay. I mean, of course, like I said before, I integrate methods into my life and techniques so I can become a better sportsman or integrating different techniques for meditation and things like this. But if you were to take all of these away today, if you were to take my meditation practice away, if they ripped my yoga mat away from me, if they took my basil plant and they were like, no, you can't have your basil plant with your water today, would it essentially make me crumble? And no, it wouldn't. Because my voice, the innate method of my individuality, is much more powerful than any technique. The techniques and the methods only complement the individuality of the self. And so as we move forward, we're finding more and more people are struggling with their self-discovery because they're looking for it. They're like, who am I? Mm-hmm. What am I? You know, and then there's the I am. I am, you know, and but we're following the philosophies of great-minded people that are teaching us, but where is the philosophy of your being? And when we begin to move forward in the future, and let's say AI does begin, or it will begin, it already is. I see it in the medical field that it's pretty impressive in what's going on for the technology aspect. And it can bring fear if people are not open to growing from a different perspective.
It reminds me of this is a story that's been around for some time, but it was the idea that Charlie Chaplin entered a Charlie Chaplin lookalike contest and he got third place. So apparently Charlie Chaplin wasn't even the best Charlie Chaplin that showed up that day, but how can that be? He's him. And what you're saying reminded me of the story is just due to his own innate evolution. Everyone else's impression of him was based off, well, the impression that he had left. It was his echo, but he had continued to grow and develop with each passing day. Everyone else's performance should have been relative to what he did that day because it was him. So I just always I've always just found that story to be impressively funny, and it just ties into our own growth and intuition. Is the best that the robots can do is to capture that and to replicate it as an echo of us, but we're still supposed to be in the lead. We're always going to be ahead as we're continuing to develop. And the excitement and really the weight that even I feel is being sort of cast off of my shoulders is how much of our brains have been forced to deal with a lot of these regulatory tasks and a lot of that rational thinking, which we can do because our brains are incredible organic devices. But to be able to ascribe that to an objective accumulator and distributor of knowledge and data frees us to do more of the intuitive work that can be satisfying to each individual. And again, I know making it about myself is always I hate when other people do it on the podcast, and yet I do it every episode. But the most joy and the most free that I felt was actually just working on my story. And so much so that it totally reframed my view of the rest of the world. And the other thing that I wanted to ask too is one of the things that you talk about is how in 10,000 years from now, humanity has evolved in 10,000 years from where we are now. And your question on the website is, are we still going to be facing anxiety? Are we still going to be facing stress? Are we still going to be facing burnout? Or have we perhaps moved past that phase and have integrated those elements into a new form of intuition? And what's crazy to me about this is I'm just thinking about how different things are going to be in the next 10 years or the next 30, next 50 years. And we're going to see some pretty insane developments, and I mean, they could happen any day now. So the idea of then extrapolating our rapid pace in another 9,900 years on top of that, for me, it's difficult to comprehend. But I think and I realize the irony of saying I think, but what I believe the point of it is to say the actual time in years isn't the important part. The important part is our awareness and our ability to reach that next point in our evolution, so that we're not so concerned about the fact that it's 10,000 years or 100,000 years or a million years. We're supposed to be getting to a new stage of consciousness that isn't just completely bound by the X amount of years that we are going to be in this human vessel. I mean, I was saying this jokingly to my partner the other day, but said, oh, don't worry about it. By the time we're 80, we'll probably have like AI chips or something inside of our brain. So we might not actually die. So, I mean, I said that jokingly, but my God, there's the things that are happening right now are insane. And so I approach it mostly with enthusiasm, so much so that because I know a lot of people in the artistic space, they're afraid of losing their ability to create because of the generative power of AI illustration and AI video production. And I said, well, if you're a storyteller, you've got nothing to worry about. You should be using this as an opportunity to focus on the reason why you got into illustration or the reason why you got into video creation. Most people don't draw just for the sake of drawing. They draw because they want to capture a world inside of their head and express it on paper or on screen. And and that's where I'm at with it. I'm like, oh, I feel more encouraged. I would rather compete against the collective embodied intelligence of all mankind. Like, bring it on. You know, the idea of competing against such a difficult entity is more encouraging than it is discouraging. I said, yeah, I would rather tell a story that can actually like be more popular than what the robots are going to produce in the next couple of years. So I'm happy for it. I can't wait.
Yeah, totally. And it's really interesting that you brought up that part of the story of the 10,000 years. It was something that I contemplated over when I was writing about this blog series on natural intelligence. And the reason why I didn't go so far ahead, let's say 100,000 years, and I didn't necessarily say 10 years, is because if I use, let's say 10 years, because I do know people think of the direct future. They're not thinking 10,000 years from now. You know, they're not contemplating what's going to happen with us. However, if I to use this, we will not have the anxiety, the mental anguish, emotional struggles that we see today. And I shorten that into a 5-year period. From a reader's perspective, it could potentially bring on stress because they might think to themselves, perhaps this is just what I was thinking. And it's interesting that you brought that up and that you noticed it, that they might think, I'm not going to be able to get it. I'm not intuitive. Oh my God, I can't, you know, and all of these emotions would start, you know, battling them to the point where they would put themselves under pressure to become something that's not naturally moving. And this is what I said to you before, when we're working in rhythm before the segment started, I use the word effortless effort. Mm-hmm. So when we're doing something within our innate self that is essentially meant for us, of course it takes effort, because you can't sit on the sofa and say, why isn't the universe giving me what I want? Which is a lot what happens now. You know, when you have manifestation and visions and universal things, it grows into a trend and there's misconceptions. So when you're striving and working towards something that's your innate power or what comes natural to you, of course it takes effort, but it's effortless. It's like a leaf that goes down the river. It just naturally moves in that rhythm until eventually it makes its way into the ocean. And then that ocean is just a sea of openness, you know? And so when we're working with, you know, I'm going to be a little bit careful now. From an evolutionary perspective, we may have jumped the gun. Is that the word, when you jump the gun? And because what we've created from a technical aspect, potentially from a humanistic level, And from the natural level of being products of the earth, there may be a possibility that we're not emotionally and mentally capable of handling it. And that can be a reason for the rise of this sort of synthetic, spontaneous evolution. So we're all like, you know, because maybe it would take another 10,000 years to become intuitive. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But we're confronted with it in this day and age. You know, and so when you look at the 10,000 years ahead, it's to just give yourself an imagination of the human being, of how they will coexist in harmony with everything they come in contact with. Because that essentially is what I believe. You know, there's the fear of our future is essentially a fear of ourselves. We're afraid potentially to grow into something that may not be accepted by either our peers or our colleagues or something, and it makes us feel like we're being shunned from the pack. And since we're sociable beings by nature, that there's this, you know, turbulence. And so since we've created this high technical level of existence so quickly, I mean, it's crazy. You know, perhaps we need to spontaneously evolve into something that would have taken us 1,000 more years, but we do have the ability to reach out to people to harness this power. And this is something that you may have read before, is it's an exercise for people to do if they're, you know, when people are searching for their intuition, or they say to me, I'm very intuitive. You know, a lot of times they'll say, I had a dream last night. It was so real, but I'm not really sure if it's going to happen or not. With intuition, there's never a question of whether it's real. It doesn't come from a command button. It comes and there is a truth or an authenticity about it that cannot be denied. When you start questioning if your intuition is real, then you are now basing your intuition, you're getting it confused with curiosity and imagination, which is also an excellent attribute that we have within our existence. And so when we're working from an intuitive level, I've always been a spiritual being, even when I was young. You know, I didn't need some outside books or anything like this. I had a very deep connection, more so with the invisible realms of our existence than I did with human beings. Because I had to fit in with the human beings, and I never fit into that box. And so when I became, let's say, spiritually more evolved, was the day that I remembered my birth. And it followed with an enlightening, or the most profound experience I've ever encountered, that lasted 10 months. Every day I had no escape, of a high level of intuition, that it was like I was strapped to a chair and I could not escape it. And this highly intuitive event concluded with the vision of my death. And in between that was, I wrote and published a book about it, because in between that was my progress of, I would say, I don't like using the word enlightenment, but as I mentioned before, the English language is very limited. So that's the closest I can get to it. And after, when I look back 4 years ago when this all transpired, when I look back upon this event, it's almost as if I was a child in that awareness. Because after this took place, it took me another 2 years of remaining within my own silence to figure out what was that all about. Why do I have a deep set of intuition or premonition or whatever you would like to call it, and I can't change a damn thing? I would rather just be outside cleaning the pool and have no idea. You know, and so it took me another 2 years of being in an integrative meditative space. And what I mean by that, it means I'm integrating in the modern world, but I'm very deep within myself. And after 2 years, I realized it wasn't about the visions. It wasn't about, let's say, what I could predict or what I could see. It was really about teaching individuals how to evolve into that next being and how they can harness their unique innate ability so they become their optimized self on no matter what it may be.
It would be nice to see that as at a collective human level, that the largest issue that humanity would face would not be poverty, would not be war, would not be famine, but it would actually just end up being boredom. Is if so many of what we've ascribed our value to for so long, whether it's in the tasks that we complete, or like you've said in the beginning, the roles or the labels that we endow ourselves with in order to navigate society, if all of that were cast aside and each individual was just put in a position of, so what do I do now that I have that freedom? I look back on some of the behaviors that I had seen during the pandemic, and people were put into houses. They were given money from the government. And my parents said, you should collect CERB here in Canada. And I said, I don't know. That's such a good idea. Well, it turns out it wasn't a good idea because the government was trying to get that money back from everybody. So that was a mess. But the point being is that people had the drive to continue to exist in the world. People didn't want to just sit around and collect money. People wanted to work. Yes, there was the money that had to be made, but there was also a sense of pride and of value and of worthiness and of purpose in how different people provided their services. And I think we can see that again. And there are lots of pursuits that have no limits to the amount of people that can be in them. Entertainment and film can always have an army of people on set. You might need thousands of people to shoot certain scenes. So there's always going to be something to do in film and entertainment. There's always going to be things to do in the world of sports. There's always going to be things to do in all of these areas. There will still be work to do in innovation and in industry and in hopefully a reevaluation of our financial structure and all of that. There's always going to be things to do. I think it's just what you had said about maybe the rapid pace in which we're implementing this might be too fast is the disconnect from the things that we feel that we've compelled to do or that we're forced to do or that we feel that we have to do. And when all of that is taken away, really that forced introspection of, okay, now what do I do to serve a purpose in the world? And there are a lot of people who the answer to that question might be something as pedestrian as just kicking back, watching TV or playing games. And what I want to say is it doesn't really matter what you do because there will be value to it. You might have value as an audience member. You might have value as a fan. Creators need fans. Otherwise, we're just entertaining ourselves in a vacuum. In the gaming space, in the online gaming space, yeah, we might not be doctors, but there are people in these high-pressure, high-stress fields like doctors and like lawyers who do turn to these environments to relieve stress. So you might be serving a purpose just by hanging out with these other people who really need a chance to unwind. So it's only slightly hyperbolic to say that being good at video games might save somebody else's life. There's a few degrees of separation there, but there's lots of different things that people could do to contribute. And are we dealing with a situation where the bandage is being ripped off quickly? I agree. That's why I've made it such an important theme on the show, which is this is happening and it's happening so gosh darn fast. We have got to talk about it and we have got to be ready for it. But it also comes from a place of enthusiasm and hoping that the more people can be aware and be excited for this is in no small part the role that I'm trying to fulfill with the work that I'm doing here.
And thank you so much. As I said, I was delighted when I received the email and that you invited me, because it's the, you know, it's touché. It's, I feel the same way. So I'm reaching out and experiencing, and I do believe that people that are ready to listen are listening, you know, and perhaps it's not the majority at the moment, but it will trickle and slowly begin to, you know, make its way into other people's minds, especially if we are intuitive people. Because if I'm thinking of it, there's a high possibility that even if someone is not voicing it, there might be something underneath their subconscious, in their subconscious mind, that's saying, something's going on. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I can feel something changing. And they don't feel secure enough within their voice to actually speak it. And so when we begin to speak it out loud, it creates a stage where more and more people can understand that we're all intricately connected, and that there's a high possibility that it doesn't matter if you are gaming on the sofa, or if you are the bus driver, or if you're teaching people like myself how to become spiritual leaders or spiritual coaches, that we all have this underlining so-called feeling that something is brewing. Mm-hmm. And it should be taken from a perspective of celebration. It's only when we stay in the confines of our solitude or insecurity, it transforms into these ailments. Where I'm seeing more and more in the medical industry is people are like, I got all my blood tests back, I got all my x-rays, I got my MRI, I have my sonogram, I have everything. The doctor says I'm fine, but I'm not. You know, and so that's actually where I came in to recognize there's so many people experiencing this. And so is it in fact that we're becoming on a high level of intuition that we're not able to filter out our inbox? You know, like if you get your email, for instance, you open up your email and your email, you've got your inbox and you've got your spam. Your email knows exactly what goes in which box. And you will open up your spam mail and you'll briefly look through it and you'll delete things. And then you might save something for later if you think it's important.
It's just like, I agree. Every so often though, an important email gets trapped in there. And almost as if it's a way for the inbox to encourage people to still go through their spam just in case. Every so often I've like gone in there like, oh man, that's an email from a friend. Why did that end up in spam?
Yeah, but the interesting part of it is that our minds, we're not using our filtering system. So we're putting everything in our inbox.
I see.
You know, even right. When it should go in our spam mail, you know, so we're bringing attention to everything and we're not allowing our filtering system. Our filtering system is not putting it in the folders that it needs to be put in, and then we become overwhelmed. And then when that happens, we don't necessarily have the capability, and our not only our emotional level starts to break down, but also our physical and spiritual. But I mean, as you can see, I could go off in many different branches from this. And yeah.
Well, the purpose of the show is because I know that there are other podcasts, and I don't want to sound disrespectful, but there's lots of shows out there that'll ask you 20 questions for 20 answers, and they serve their purpose. I just don't want to do that. I like to let people think out loud, and that's sort of the environment that I certainly feel was successfully created today, and it doesn't just benefit, it's done for the benefit of the guests, but it is also done for my benefit too, to just have that opportunity to receive what you're saying, think about it, but then continue to receive what else you're saying, and in what way does it support, reinforce, or refute what comes to my mind as a result of that. So I do have to wrap this up, though. This has been a great episode. Very, very fast hour and 15 minutes, I must say. But let me finalize by saying the takeaway that is sticking out to me as a result of this conversation is the idea that we are automating aspects of our world because we're sick of it ourselves. We're not machines. We shouldn't have been treated like machines. We shouldn't have been worked like machines. We shouldn't have been going to factories and pulling levers. We shouldn't have been dealing with these like interactions where we just receive the same order over and over and over again and do things that feel machine-like. We're not machines. We're humans. And so this effort to take all of the stuff that we've been relying on, our precious resources, and put them into these entities that can save up so much capacity and allow us to be more human. Not only is that a piece of the puzzle that I've been trying to put together for, I don't know, like the last 10 episodes, but that's an argument that I look forward to making in the future for people who perhaps are more weary of AI. And I have my weariness towards it too. It's not going to be perfect, but I mean, everything in history has been regulated by the government, so I don't see how there won't be regulations in place to keep the truly dark things staying in the dark places.
Already.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, what hasn't been regulated, right? So, you know. But that's the last thing that I'll say for the day, at least as far as, you know, the recording goes. We have a little bit of a powwow to do after this, if I understand it correctly. But I'll let you have the floor one more time in case anything else has been really pulsating as a result of this conversation. You want to make sure it's shared, and then otherwise let the audience know how they can get in touch if they are so inclined.
Okay, perfect. The one thing, you know, since we are the how-to beings, I go back to that. If you are interested in learning more about your intuition, for instance, I invite you to just perhaps, you know, have for fun, you know, practice an exercise, whether it's home on your day off or even at work with your colleagues, you know, in your mind, ask yourself or become more aware of how many of the times you say, I think, or you think, I think. So, you know, a lot of the times when we go through life, we'll say, I think that should be over there. Okay. So when we're so into our thoughts, I think, in actuality, what we're doing is we're presenting an opinion or a belief. An intuition comes from an innate knowing. So when you go through your day, just try it one day, perhaps, and it will be fun to just integrate something new, and no one will even notice. But what you might also become aware of is that you begin to talk less. Because instead of going through the whole day saying, I think that should go there, or I think it should be over there, or maybe I think that the color should be this color. You know, what we're doing is we're putting all our beliefs and opinions before our intuition. And so if you take one day to just soften the I think and just allow it to become more on a lower volume and become aware of it, you'll be able to increase your intuitive abilities because you'll be more aware of your surroundings and your sounds, your hearings, and your vision. And you can start by doing that, and you might be more observant to something you otherwise would have missed if you were too much in, I think. And that's about it. And once again, I just thank you so much. And if people are interested in furthering a conversation, with me in any way, I'm welcome to hear from them. And it's easy for them to contact me through my website at carlenesullivan.com. And I'm wishing everyone, and I believe in a fabulous future coming for us.
Well, thank you. Thank you again for being on the program and for not only sharing your expertise, but helping to contribute in sort of this greater work that I have felt compelled to do over the last few months. And it will be interesting to see how our program develops. Feedback is, of course, tantamount to our development of it. I'm not an algorithm hawk. I'm not somebody who feels like I need to tailor the show just to satisfy YouTube algorithm. I'm never going to be that guy. But I do still want to value, say, hey, we want to hear more of this. So, you know, by all means, let's whatever it is you have to say, feel free. It is Joseph at ImpactfulCoachingPodcast.com. That's Joseph. The rest of it is spelled the way you're used to. So with that, it is our endeavor to ensure in whatever way you are helping others, we want you to be impactful while you're at it.